Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. The city of Clayton has come a long way in its nearly 100 years. We'll be talking about what it was, is, and will be in a few minutes. But first, a few weeks ago, the Missouri Foundation for Health issued a lengthy report that provides some noteworthy information about health care in the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community. It points to significant disparities in health care for LGBT individuals, including the finding that LGBT Missourians are more than twice as likely to not receive needed medical care or surgery compared to the general population. What are the other disparities? Why do they exist, and what can be done about it? We're talking about that today with Ryan Barker of the Missouri Foundation for Health. The foundation seeks to improve health conditions for underserved, uninsured, and underinsured Missourians. A.J. Bockelman is Executive Director of PROMO, which advocates for the LGBT community. Thank you both gentlemen for being here. Nice to see you.
Good to see you.
Ryan, let me begin with you. What prompted this report?
So one of the areas that the foundation works in is health disparities and decreasing or eliminating health disparities for all Missourians. So for 8 years now, we have been focusing on different populations, whether it's African Americans, Hispanics, women, rural versus urban disparities. And this report really stems out of that previous work and focusing for the first time on the LGBT population.
How long did it take to compile the report, and how was it compiled?
You know, it took longer than we expected. It was probably about a six-month process, and part of that reason is there a lot of the data has to be found in different places. There isn't good data, and a lot of that is because most federal surveys do not collect information or data on the LGBT population.
In one sentence, can you tell us basically what you discovered? We'll get into more detail, but basically, what is the major finding?
That health disparities do exist for this population, and that they have a detrimental impact on health and health outcomes.
AJ, did this report come as a surprise to you?
No. We've known for quite some time that not just anecdotally, but when health equity is a major issue for us. When people cannot necessarily hold down a job because they're discriminated against, their access to health care goes down. So the numbers in this report don't necessarily shock me. There were some sort of tangential pieces that come out, you know, like as we get into the numbers here, things like gay men are twice as likely to experience asthma. That was something that I wouldn't have expected. And there's different pieces like that in this report.
Is the foundation of this report really based on discrimination?
I believe that is at the core, yes.
Yeah. All righty. Well, let's get into some of the findings, if we can. I've got a whole list of them here. And we'll start with you, Ryan. Poor outcomes.
Absolutely. So there are lots of poor health outcomes, and a lot of that, I think, is, as AJ just stated, is tied to discrimination, whether it's just oppression based on individuals or organizations or society. And then some of that has to also do with differences in the law and how they impact people. So one of the big ones is access to health insurance. So the LGBT population is about 1.5 times more likely to be uninsured. And when you're uninsured, that is a direct correlation to worse health outcomes when you don't have the health insurance. And some of that higher rate of uninsured has to do with the lack of domestic partner benefits. So health insurance benefits, if you have a partner or a spouse and your employer doesn't offer those. So then that's part of the reason why we see those higher rates of health insurance.
AJ, do you want to comment on each of these things as we go through? I mean, obviously, that's fairly clear cut.
Yeah, it's fairly clear cut. You know, access to services is a high priority.
The question of law, what sort of law is out there that is either negative or positive for the LGBT community?
Well, the core for us is access to basic necessities. And in Missouri, the human rights statute covers discrimination in housing, public accommodations, and employment. And right now, it does not include sexual orientation or gender identity. And it's a health equity issue when you look at it in that perspective.
Should it have to specify that, or should that just be taken as a given?
Surveys show that about 90% of the population believes that LGBT folks are already covered in those areas. There are changes coming. We've already seen some housing updates from the federal standards that are extended to sexual orientation and gender identity. Title VII has been an opinion has been issued by the EEOC to include gender identity in discrimination cases. But sexual orientation is still not covered in 29 states. Gender identity is not covered in 34 states.
Another of the findings in the foundation's report, pardon me, is that members of the LGBT community have less access to health care. What does that mean to you, and how is that so?
Well, for example, if you're married, it's easy to go on to your spouse's insurance. For the LGBT community, it's oftentimes that you have to have domestic partner benefits available at your company. Currently, only about 75% of the Fortune 500 companies offer domestic partner benefits. When you go further down the food chain, it's not as common. And even in a small employer, for example, Promo, we have six staff. I can't offer domestic partner benefits because our health insurance doesn't make it available to a small employer.
Ryan, is this more pronounced in the LGBT community than it is in other groups?
You know, part of what this report points out, and the reason the foundation looks at a broad group of populations when we're doing these type of studies, is that people don't live in these little isolated boxes of African American or Hispanic or LGBT, mm-hmm. and these disparities all build on each other. So part of what the report points out is that an individual that's in the LGBT population but also as a racial minority, their disparities are compounded and oftentimes even worse.
What about the issue of stigma? We talked about discrimination, and I think these two kind of fold over somehow. How does that play into all of this, AJ?
Well, certainly I know that anecdotally I hear stories every day. We lost someone that was very involved in the community just a few months ago, less than a month ago, actually. And we discovered that he wasn't even out to his 80-year-old parents. And it was pretty shocking to everyone that knew him well. And there's that stigma that happens still. Depends upon age a little bit. We're seeing younger and younger people come out. And so it's changing with time. But in a state like Missouri, where you have these little islands where people feel somewhat comfortable or safe, like St. Louis or Kansas City, Columbia, and to a great extent, even Springfield. But outside of those areas, people don't necessarily feel comfortable or safe. Mm-hmm. They're afraid.
Same finding, Ryan?
Yeah, I mean, I think that this goes to some of the data in the report that about 40% of the LGBT community doesn't even tell their healthcare provider that they are part of this sexual minority group. And if the doctor isn't aware or they're not comfortable sharing that, the doctor doesn't even know that there's all these health issues that they should be asking about tobacco use, about different cancers that have higher rates for this population. If the doctors aren't aware and there's that stigma where the patient doesn't feel comfortable, it doesn't make for a really easy back and forth between patient and doctor.
Well, another of the finding is that medical centers are not free of discrimination. I guess that's what we're talking about.
Absolutely.
Here.
Patients just don't feel comfortable.
But what are some of the medical issues that are peculiar to this community that are different from anyone else?
You know, there are several different – there are a couple different kinds of cancer that are more common. So in lesbians, breast cancer is actually – there's higher rates of breast cancer. And they think that some of that is tied to what is called nulliparity, which is not having children. And so by not having children, and lesbians are less likely to have children, you end up with higher risks of breast cancer. And so that is one of those factors that if your provider is aware of, may take different steps or start screenings at a different time if they're aware of your sexual orientation.
AJ, what about members of the community itself? Are they aware of these differences or potential differences?
No. Actually, oftentimes they're not. At Promo and another peer group that I work with, SAGE of Metro St. Louis, Services and Advocacy for GLBT Elders, we're starting to look at how do we do a better job of educating within the community. Because a report like this coming out is a great access point for us to open up dialogues with care providers, with the folks in the room that do want to address these issues in a healthcare setting. But part of the work also has to be within the LGBT community to raise awareness of these types of issues.
Does this report go any distance at all in accomplishing that objective?
I believe this is a wonderful starting point. I've said for a long time that you need to have the data in order to advance anything. And this is something that we know that we've not had the reports on the national level. National Institutes of Health for years actually purposely excluded sexual orientation studies. But that's all changed now in the last few years. And we're getting more data. We're getting stronger information that's coming out. And the more this comes out, the more it's going to help us advocate in a number of different ways.
Well, what is the size of the LGBT community in our area?
In our area, good question. So in general, I can speak to a number given by Gary Gates. He's a statistician that worked with the Census Bureau and the Williams Institute out of California. It's a think tank out of UCLA. And his estimate is that 3.4% of the population identifies as LGBT. Mm-hmm. Within Missouri, I believe actually here in one of the pages, we have a general estimate. Off the top of my head, I'm not remembering.
Yeah, and then we actually get asked this question a lot, and the part of the issue is there isn't good data on this. So the census has started collecting data on same-sex households, but that doesn't, you know, that tells you something, but it doesn't tell you necessarily about the LGBT population for individuals, or and the census doesn't ask those questions. So we really don't have great demographic data in terms of just even straight numbers of how many people are we talking.
There's a strong effort that by 2020 in the next census, there will be full inclusion of the LGBT population in that census. So we get more exact numbers for the individuals willing to self-acknowledge.
That was the point I was going to raise there. That can be an issue.
Correct.
Needless to say. But that is changing, you indicate.
It is. I know just in – I can only really honestly speak for myself in this case. In the 20-plus years that I've been out, I've seen things considerably change for the community.
Yeah.
But as you indicate, there is still stigma in some populations in some areas.
Our conversation today is focusing on health disparities within the LGBT community. My guests in studio are Ryan Barker of the Missouri Foundation for Health, which recently released a report outlining and cataloging these disparities. He is with me in studio, as I mentioned, as is A.J. Bachelman, Executive Director of PROMO. We'll be back to continue that conversation. I'd like to get members of our listening audience into the discussion as well. If you're a member of the LGBT community, have you experienced health care disparities? We would love to hear from you. 382-8255 is our number. That's 382-TALK. You can also send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. We'll take a tweet at STL on air, or you can also reach us through Facebook. Back with Messrs. Barker and Bachelman in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again. Welcome back to our conversation, which today is focusing on healthcare disparities within the LGBT community. Guests in studio are A.J. Bachelman, Executive Director of PROMO, and Ryan Barker of the Missouri Foundation for Health. One of the things I noted in the report, Ryan, was that there are some problems within the whole system of Medicaid. What did you find there?
So one of the factors was that Medicaid does not cover transition surgery for someone with gender that is transgender, but it's required in order to change some of your state documents, such as your driver's license. So if you can't have the surgery, you can't try change your driver's license. But a lot of people are dressing as the gender they feel, and so it can cause problems with law officials and problems in the community.
Does the foundation have any specific recommendations as part of its report or outside of the report for changing some of the things that we've been talking about?
Absolutely. So one of the things that we did a little different with this disparities report that we haven't done in the past with some of our data books was not just to present the data, because we think that's a great first step, but then how do you change things? And so the whole last part of this report is policy recommendations, and they're really split out into different categories of how do you address access to care, how do you address discrimination, and we do lay out a whole set of action steps of how could we make differences in Missouri.
Can you give us a couple of for instances?
Sure. So one of them, I think, is something AJ already addressed, which is non-discrimination clauses for employment and housing being put in Missouri, changes to public insurance programs such as Medicaid, legal recognition for same-sex couples in terms of health insurance and being able to have domestic partner benefit. So there's three right there, but there's probably 30 or 40 recommendations in the report.
One of the issues raised during the course of this discussion was training for medical students, for instance, bringing them kind of up to speed on what's going on and some of the things they should be looking for. Is that among your recommendations? Did that change?
It is, because currently one of the things the report points out is that medical students receive only about 5 hours of training in their full 4 years of medical school on the LGBT community, and most of that 5 hours relates to HIV. And as the report points out, there's a whole host of other health issues. Now, medical school and classes are tight, and adding additional information is difficult, but we really feel like that is an area training health professionals differently and having different data presented to them.
AJ, I think that's one of the things that most people think about when they talk about your group, and that is that it all begins and ends with HIV.
Right. There's always that center point that it comes back to. And in some ways, when we saw the HIV epidemic take off, you know, throughout the 80s and early 90s, it sort of derailed some of the advances that we were on track to have at that time, because suddenly all the issues became centered around HIV, when clearly HIV is something that's well beyond the LGBT community at this point. And we need to have stronger policies that reinforce, you know, basic protections.
I want to go to the phones, but just backtracking for a moment to get to the issue of recommendations. I know you have experience in dealing with the state legislature. What sort of a response do you get when you're down there lobbying for some of the things the kinds of things that we're talking about today?
So I do believe the times are changing. We have more Republican support now than what we used to. It's not a divided wall. Because honestly, traditionally, Democrats have been stronger for us on our LGBT issues.
It's partisan then.
But it is becoming more nonpartisan than what it had been.
Let's go to the phones. We have a number of folks who want to get into the conversation. We'll bring them in. Russell in St. Louis, you're first up. Go ahead.
Hi, Don.
Hi.
I actually am also a member of PROMO, so I know AJ. How are you, AJ?
Hi, Don.
I just wanted to mentioned that I have personally experienced the difficulties in getting health care. My partner and I have been together for 15 years, and there was a time when I left my full-time job in order to go back to school and get another more advanced degree at college. It was impossible for me to get an affordable health care plan through my partner's work plan, simply because his company did not provide domestic partner benefits. So currently, my partner is self-employed, and I am working part-time. So we have to buy our own individual health care policies. If you have a pre-existing condition, the costs are extremely prohibitive, especially when you cannot get on your partner's policy. There are no ways to get around that. So we pay an exorbitant amount of our income simply to maintain our health care costs. And it's very difficult. A lot of people don't do that. I also wanted to just comment, you were speaking about the 3.8%, I believe, that were LGBT. I have to agree with AJ. I am sure that most people don't identify on forms like the census form. First of all, they're very vague when they ask about domestic partnerships. The information is very vague, and a lot of people live by themselves or live with family, live with roommates, what have you, and there is just no way to identify themselves. So I think that number is grossly underestimated.
Russell, thank you so much for the call. Is what Russell's saying, I'm sure, Ryan, is coincides with what your findings show.
Absolutely. I mean, and the good news is, as AJ said, there's different options for addressing some of these concerns that Russell pointed out. One is we're currently working, or AJ is currently working on issues like domestic partner benefits. From a different angle, the Affordable Care Act is creating these new health insurance exchanges that are meant for people in the individual and small group market and should bring down some health care insurance costs for them. So that would come 2014, that'll be a good option for Russell and his partner.
Do insurance policies for people who do identify themselves as members of the LGBT community, do insurance policies differ for people who so identify from others?
Typically, no. I can speak to that as a small employer. There's no part of the census that we fill out, the census in the sense that the information we submit to the insurance company that identifies LGBT.
But it's a good idea for members of this group when they are seeking medical attention to so identify to their physician?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Back to the phones. Let's bring in Rick calling from Brentwood. Rick, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. And Don, thank you so much for having this program on today. My partner and I have been together for 29 years in February. I've been a realtor since the late 70s. If I live in the state of Illinois, where I'm originally from, I can get coverage for both myself and my partner through the National Association of Realtors. However, we both live in Missouri now, and when I call to inquire about the coverage, when I tell them I live in Missouri, they basically say, I'm sorry, it's not available. Is that a function that the National Realtor Association does not have to offer the coverage in Missouri because Missouri doesn't recognize it, and therefore they've chosen not to, and Illinois indicates that they need to offer the coverage, and I believe that it's the case, although I don't know, I'm asking for your help, but I believe the National Association of Realtors has chosen not to offer it in Missouri because they're not required to, even though they could potentially offer it, like Illinois and other states that have mandated it. Can you address that issue, and I'll take the answers off the air.
Thank you, Rick. Can either of you gentlemen address that?
I'm not positive. I would assume that it would be a choice for the Missouri realtors because I know that there are companies and businesses in Missouri that do offer domestic partner benefits. So I don't think – there's nothing in Missouri that requires that in state law that businesses offer that, the coverage. And so I would assume, therefore, that that's a choice being made between the Missouri Realtors Association and the Illinois one.
I would agree with that assessment. And the difference here, too, is that – Illinois offers civil unions, so there's legal recognition of same-sex couples, whereas Missouri has no equivalent.
One of the things that you discuss in your report, Ryan, is the fact that the members of the LGBT community are less likely to seek preventive care. Why is that?
I think it's several of the things we've already talked about because there is less health insurance coverage. Because if you don't have health insurance coverage, you're less likely to seek out that preventative care. And then the other factor is really being comfortable with your doctor and open and having a medical provider that you know and trust and feel comfortable going to. You know, people don't like going to the doctor, and it just adds one more reason for why people don't want to go to the doctor.
AJ, are there times or circumstances of which you might be aware or some of the people you know are aware in which medical treatment is just denied?
Unfortunately, yes. We don't see it as much here, say, in the St. Louis metropolitan region. Most of the hospitals that I'm aware of are pretty friendly. But I do hear of it fairly often in the rural areas.
AJ, you're finding that as well?
Absolutely.
Well, the next question is, where do we go from here? And Ryan, I'll put that one to you first.
Yeah, I mean, I think, as AJ said, times are changing. And so one of the issues is that young people are coming out earlier and earlier and being more comfortable self-identifying. But we still see issues. And so one of the things in the report that I wanted to make sure we hit on was the differences with youth. And what are their top concerns for the LGBT population compared to their peers? And the straight youth worry about classes and grades and college and financial pressures. And those are their top three concerns. But for LGBT youth, their top concerns are non-accepting families, school and bullying, and fear of being out and open. And so I think that's one of the places we have to start is with our youth to really, as we see the culture changing, I think it's one of the priorities in Missouri. It should be one of the priorities for us is to really address some of these bullying issues. Kids can't concentrate when their top three concerns have nothing to do with school.
AJ, where do we go from here?
Well, as you know, my organization, we constantly work on the Missouri Non-Discrimination Act. That's the effort to add sexual orientation, gender identity. So we will continue headlong with that effort, as well as an anti-bullying bill that's inclusive of sexual orientation, gender identity. Beyond that, we are also working on assembling the healthcare providers together to deliver this information to them. potentially we are looking at a healthcare policy person that will help work with some of these groups to better educate folks. We have a couple of different agencies here that are capable of doing cultural competency trainings, and the SAGE of Metro St. Louis is one of those. And I think that it's elements like that. It's baby steps. We're at level one, and we've got a long way to go to get to 10.
I know that your Missouri Foundation report focuses on Missouri. Do you have any indication that the same sort of findings have, assuming similar surveys have been taken, same sort of findings pop up in other states?
There's a lot of different factors, but in general, yes. But a lot depends on what are the laws or statutes that are specific right to that state. And it's one of the difficulties for businesses that operate in different states is trying to keep track of all the different laws and how they impact their business practices from state to state.
AJ, is there a state that we should be looking at that might be a model for Missouri?
So our peer group in Colorado, it's called One Colorado, has collaborated with their State Department of Health. And they issued a report very similar to this report, but with Colorado-specific data. And in the difference being there, they've been collecting data on sexual orientation, gender identity for years.
And can put that data presumably to good use and
yes,
perhaps already have. But I want to thank you, A.J. Bachelman of PROMO. Thank you so much for being with us and talking about this report, which was put out by the Missouri Foundation for Health. And Ryan Barker, thank you so much for representing the folks who put this report together.
Thank you.
Nice to talk to you both. When we come back, an early happy birthday for the city of Clayton. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.